Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the latest efforts to free the kidnapped schoolgirls in Nigeria that might involve a prisoner swap the Nigerian government has signaled it is considering. Ni Ekwete, an independent policy researcher and analyst who previously served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., joins us to discuss the possibility of exchanging captured Boko Haram terrorists for the kidnapped schoolgirls and what kind of military and intelligence assistance the beleaguered government of Goodluck Jonathan might be getting from the United States. Then we will speak with Matthew Rothschild, the senior editor of the Progressive magazine, where he has an article, Obama Threatens Pulitzer Prize Winner. We will look into the Obama administration's efforts to jail the New York Times Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter James Risen on federal contempt of court charges unless he releases the identity of his confidential source on a story involving a botched CIA attempt to provide Iran with a blueprint of a flawed design for a nuclear bomb. The Progressive, along with four other organizations, have generated a petition with 50,000 signatures so far in support of James Risen and his First Amendment rights. Then finally, Dr. Mark Rank, a professor of social welfare at Washington University, St. Louis, and Thomas Herschel, professor of development sociology at Cornell University, join us to discuss their new book, Chasing the American Dream, Understanding What Shapes Our Fortunes. We'll discuss the book's extraordinary finding that 4 out of 5 Americans at some time experience hunger, homelessness, and unemployment, yet we have a government dominated by politicians who serve the interests of the 1% in part because the majority of poor Americans either don't vote or vote for the interests of billionaires. And joining us now is Ni Ekwete, who's an independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously, he served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ni Ekwete.
It is a pleasure to be back, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And what do you understand is this being floated by the Nigerian government that they may be considering a prisoner swap with Boko Haram? Apparently, they already have a government agency that's been set up for some time with a minister of special duties, head of an amnesty committee that had been set up by President Goodluck Jonathan last year. That's supposed to, deal with this Boko Haram insurgency and the militants that they have in custody.
Oh, I see it as a good thing in terms of the willingness to negotiate towards a prisoner swap, because I think the priority is the safety, the safe return of these almost 300 young women. That comes first. And as you mentioned, the government, the Nigerian government, has had a unit for a while, because Boko Haram has been in business for some 12 years, and they became violent some 5 years ago. They talk from both sides of their mouth, so at some point they will say, well, we want to negotiate our concerns, but they haven't. So the government set up, Jonathan's government set up a negotiating team and said it will negotiate, but it didn't go anywhere because, frankly, my opinion of Boko Haram is very low. It's been that low. I have been talking about them for 5 years. So this is not a new attitude on my part. I don't think they can be trusted and all that. But given where we are, I am glad of the international support that Nigeria is getting, because, again, I've been calling for it for 5 years. Now they are getting it. And that help needs to be used to accomplish a number of goals. But the number one topmost goal is find and return, the finding and safe return of the girls. And it seems to me the only way that can be done is through a prisoner swap, because I don't see how you rescue them, given how crazy Boko Haram is. Now, I'm no military expert, but it sounds to me like it has to be an agreement to exchange Boko Haram suspects in prison with all of the young women. Now, I don't think the rescue of the young women is the only mission to be accomplished. It's part of the mission. I think once that is done, we have to find out where Boko Haram has been getting their money from. Some suspect that even some elite Nigerians might be behind them. So I think they must be worried, because given the U.S. assets and the U.S. help, it has intelligence capabilities of finding out money flows, how Boko Haram gets its money. But I think ultimately the third goal should be, by the time that we are done, Boko Haram should cease to exist. I don't think there is any good thing about it. But the first step is negotiate with them, get the girls back safely, and then become tough on them. This is my recipe.
So, Niyokwete, though, what do you understand is going on? If assuming that there's a two-track policy here, floating the idea of negotiation and a prisoner swap, at the same time we know that Western intelligence and military assets are coming in, both from the US and the UK, don't know the extent to which what's being deployed, and don't know the extent of cooperation with the Nigerian military. When you say you've been calling for a more vigorous action against Boko Haram for 5 years, I take it there's an issue of pride, surely, from the Nigerian government that it doesn't want to admit it can't handle its own internal affairs?
You put your finger on it. So, yes, I mean, when I've been speaking, it's been directed mostly at the U.S. saying, listen, and the international community, that, you know, with my small voice and my position, is don't look at this as just a problem for only Nigeria. Because we know that these kinds of things always metastasize. It gets bigger, and they are in an area of Nigeria where if you leave the major city that they are located in, Maiduguri, within 100 miles of travel in different directions, you'll be in four different countries: Cameroon, Central Africa Republic, Chad, and Niger. So it could easily spread. But what I was calling for was just an attitude on the part of the U.S. to say, yes, this is a problem that we need to support the Nigerians in dealing with, because if it spreads, it will only become bigger and more dangerous, and it can affect us and friends of ours. But you are right. On the other side of the equation, so partly I was directing my remarks also over these 5 years at the Nigerians too, that, listen, I mean, you know, Ian, in the 5 years, by some calculations, which I happen to agree with, as many as 8,000 Nigerians have been killed by Boko Haram. 8,000. So the matter of Nigerians saying, well, this is a matter of pride, we don't want international help. I follow politics, so I can understand the political calculations behind it, but I thought it was misplaced, because I think the lives of and the terror that Boko Haram was unleashing should have made the Nigerians accept international help, but of course it didn't, so they were very sensitive to it. Now, this particular act of kidnapping close to 300 girls in school, you know, actually sort of was so heinous, and it captured the sympathy of the world. And the reaction has been so strong that it has overwhelmed a number of things, including the Nigerian position that we don't want international help. But it also has overwhelmed the reluctance of the U.S. and other international groups to say we don't want to give the Nigerians help, because it hasn't simply been that Nigeria didn't want the help. I've talked with a lot of people around Washington. I mean, about 2 months ago, I was arguing with a close friend that, listen, Boko Haram is terrible. The U.S. needs to help them. They were saying to me, well, we don't want to help them because the Nigerian military is not doing the right thing and they've been accused of violations. And I was saying, listen, this is not the first army that has been accused. Anytime there is a war, armies get accused all the time, but we have to keep our eye on who is the bad guy and what they are doing, and we have to find a way to win the war against Boko Haram, and then we can deal with the abuses of the Nigerian government.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Niyokwete, who is an independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously, he served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. So, but there is actually a law that prevents the U.S. from sending its military in and working too closely with the Nigerian government. It's called the Leahy Amendment, named after the senator from Vermont, that forbids the U.S. Giving military assistance to countries with records of human rights abuses. And clearly there have been some. But my understanding is that the way that the Nigerian government dealt with the MEND terrorist movement in the Delta, who were interfering with the oil, which is the main source of revenue for the government, they basically bought them off, didn't they?
Yes. I mean, I think you raise a couple of interesting points. To take them backwards, yes, with MEND, it is true that they were giving money. But I do think that, you know, I have often seen people seeing parallels between MEND and Boko Haram. I don't see it, because the grievances are simply very different. MEND represents people on whose land the oil is. And when you go into the area, first of all, the wealth from under their feet is being taken away for the benefit of Americans and the Western world and elites in Abuja. And so I think they have a direct claim to say, no, we need to get some of this wealth back. Secondly, their soil and water and air is polluted. If you go to Port Harcourt, it's hard to breathe, and I was there. So I frankly don't fault the Nigerian government for, quote, buying MEND off. I think Boko Haram is very different, and I'm very unsympathetic to them, because I don't see how killing poor Nigerians is a way to protest poverty in Nigeria. I don't see how blowing up schools, killing school children, and kidnapping them is going to deal with your grievances. And Nigeria has turned to democracy 20 years ago. For the first 30 years, it was mostly a military dictatorship from the north, and Boko Haram did not arise. And so I think when a country is practicing democracy, by no means perfect democracy, no democracy is perfect, not even the U.S., but if the processes are there, you have grievances and you want to change public policy, you have peaceful means. So for me, that they have been beyond the pale. Now, a quick thing on the Leahy Amendment. You know, I think it's a great law. I mean, on so many occasions, we have actually pushed the U.S. to apply it, because we don't think it always applies it when it should, like with Rwanda, which has serially invaded directly and indirectly Congo, and yet Paul Kagame is such a darling of Washington that they don't talk about Leahy. So we've been saying implement Leahy. But the only thing I'll say is that the law actually says that the penalty of not helping a military that has committed abuses, it's applied to units, not a country, not the whole army. So you can train a battalion if that battalion has not been accused of abuses, if a different battalion has. So actually, the British and the Americans, the British are the ones taking the public view. But as we speak, they are beginning to train 650 rangers of Nigerian rangers in how to track and find the girls. They are also using sophisticated equipment and all that.
So given the violent nature of this movement and how far beyond the pale they are and how much they are usurping Islam or acting in the name of Islam, but being denounced by Islamic scholars around the world, what then would happen in any kind of rescue scenario? I imagine they've shown this video of all of the not all of the about 100 of these young women out of the almost 300 that they've taken. They've put them in hijabs and paraded them and said they've all been already converted to Islam. And by the way, I think that these girls, you know, quite a number of them are Muslim to begin with, and I don't know what the ratio of Muslim to Christian is in amongst the kidnapped girls. But anyway, the point is, surely there'll be bloodshed if there's a rescue attempt. I mean,
I mean, I think that is the big fear. That is the big unspoken fear, which is why right when we began, I said that, yes, I mean, as much as I, and again, I have been strongly opposed to Boko Haram, and but I think that the first goal should be negotiation with them to get as many of the girls as safely as we can. And one only hopes that this time they are serious, because in times past they've said that they want to negotiate, then they stop negotiating. I do think this time they will, I'm hoping, and part of me thinks that they will negotiate, because there is, first of all, I think three big things have changed. The Nigerian government now is going to, you know, shift gears and ramp up its effort because the world is watching them. Number two, you know, the international community, China, Israel, UK, France, the United States, all of them now say we are going to help Nigeria. And the third thing is what we just mentioned. All these Islamic groups and authorities and scholars who have come, that Boko Haram is beyond the pale. Here is the thing, which is what I was implying. Over the past 5 years, they have not said that. Over the past 5 years, they kept quiet. In fact, I have done more TV arguing with Muslim activists over what is going on in Central African Republic, where admittedly, the 15% of the community that is Muslim has been catching a lot of violence and horrendous violence being perpetrated against them. But these groups that I talk with globally, and they have me on debates and things, they only want to talk, and I'll say to them, that is terrible, but look at Boko Haram too. It is because these girls were kidnapped, it has changed the whole atmosphere. So now you've got a lot of these Muslim groups now saying, I'm saying before they were quiet, which is to answer your question that I hope it doesn't come to violence, but I don't think that Boko Haram now enjoys any support. One quick thing on support. You know, I try to tell people in Washington that a third factor in the Boko Haram situation, you know, the right wing says, oh, you know, they are just religious fanatics and that's how all Islam is. Some of the people in the Obama administration, especially former Assistant Secretary Johnny Carson, were saying, no, 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 it's an issue of poverty and misgovernance. And I actually thought, having lived in Nigeria and having grown up next to Nigeria and studied the area, I thought that they were also forgetting it's more or less a power struggle. And there are people in Nigeria who believe that northern elites who did not like losing power were secretly supporting Boko Haram. But the point is that since the kidnapping a month ago, things have changed. And one of the things that, Ian, I'm watching out for is U.S. support for Nigeria includes intelligence. And it's something I've been calling for, because you have to know where their money and arms are coming from. And there's been suspicion and speculation that some elite northern Nigerians might have been funding them to destabilize the government because a southerner is heading it. So we will find out who had been supporting Boko Haram. But for now, everybody, like rats on a sinking ship, those who supported them in secret are now running away, and everybody is condemning them. So I don't see them getting any sympathy. One hopes that it doesn't come to violence.
Well, Nia Kwete, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Nia Kwete, who's an independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously, he served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back looking into the Obama administration's efforts to jail a New York Times Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter.